This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 460, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 460, a number of almost no significance. I am Josh Flanagan. Today with me is Connor Kilpatrick.
So this is not an all-email show?
No.
Oh, crap. I prepared wrong.
You know what? That's fine. Sounds fun. And for the way busier than I think we're comfortable with Paul Montgomery, we have Jim Viscardi, editor-in-chief of comicbook.com, the most valuable URL in I don't know, fandom. I don't,
what hello, friends.
Hi.
Hi, Jim.
Good to have you. We were so tired of doing two-man shows. This is great.
I was starting to get worried. I was like
what's there were going multiple on? like feuds going on. Yeah. Like,
well, Connor's
not talking to Paul, but Paul won't talk to Josh.
It's like Eric Clapton in the Beatles sessions at the end. You know, you have to bring a third guy in so that I acknowledge Josh's presence.
I started a chart, and I was trying to determine what the actual beef was, but I'm glad everything's okay.
He knows
what you're going to call you. We're going to call you Billy Preston for the rest of the time here.
He knows jokes. What he did.
He knows! We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of them, especially on 5th weeks where there's not supposed to be a lot of books, but there is. And one of us will pick the one that they call the best book of the week, the pick of the week. And we'll talk about it here on the show, other books from the week, and some other stuff, and perhaps some tomfoolery, some nonsense, and hijinks, maybe? A hijink or two? Multiple? Before we get going, we're going to talk about what happens in the book, so there will be spoilers if you haven't read them yet. Read them and come back, or be forewarned. So here you go. Connor, you had the pick.
This was a 5th week, and I had a very bizarre stack of comics. I actually didn't have that many. I don't know what you were reading, but I didn't have a lot. What I did have was almost entirely Image comics.
Yeah.
Because they don't seem to give a fuck about the 5th week. They just put everything out anyway. But the best book ended up being Wonder Woman 35, which was the final issue of Brian Azzarello and mostly Cliff Chang's epic Vertigo-esque Wonder Woman story that started with the New 52 relaunch way back 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And, who would have thought this particular story would have lasted this long? It was basically what it was. Flying in the face of all convention, it was a 35-part story. Mm-hmm. It very much was like a Vertigo, not just in content, which was very unlike DC, unlike the New 52, but also in format in the way that it was a giant epic tale. And I give DC credit for publishing it. I give the creative team credit for doing it and bringing in a whole bunch of new Wonder Woman fans, because this book appealed to a lot of your non-traditional Wonder Woman fan base. And this was the final issue, and I thought it was really nice bit of symmetry in that That very first issue, which was the pick of the week, I believe it was yours, Josh.
Yeah, I remember. I wrote that one, I think.
Yeah.
That's such how long ago.
Wasn't your ghostwriter back then?
Yeah.
It began with Zola and the pregnancy of the young girl that Wonder Woman is protecting, and it ends with that baby here on the throne of Olympus. And I liked how it all came full circle. I liked that this bizarre story of the god infighting in the family. Basically, this was the story of a dysfunctional family, and that is sort of how it ended. And I just liked this really bizarre take on Wonder Woman. And it's funny because I haven't, again, we've mentioned this before, not doing the website, we don't really keep up with the news anymore. And I knew that the David Finch reboot was coming. I didn't know when. And I kept thinking, well, it's got to be soon. They keep talking about it. So what's happened? And then suddenly this book is over. So it was a nice kind of surprise to not know this was the final chapter until basically the day I got the issue.
It's weird that it seemed fast, but of course it obviously was not fast.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I was like, oh, that's it? But like for 2 years, we're like, all right, get on with it. A little bit.
And I think a lot of the credit goes to Cliff Chang, who,
yeah,
from the very beginning, and he's drawn maybe two-thirds of this run, we'll say. Really establish the identity and the look and the feel of this book. I mean, this is I remember when he was first announced, we were all like, yes, because his Wonder Woman is, you know, it's not a sexualized Wonder Woman. It's a badass Wonder Woman. I remember we interviewed him way back at Comic-Con before the book came out, talking about how he was choreographing the fights like a wrestling match, and really fun art design from him. And this was another great issue in which we basically got almost every major character that we've seen throughout this run in a big-ass brawl. And so it was bloody, it was gruesome, even Zola suddenly develops these claws. We find out why later, because she was actually Athena.
I thought she
was Hera.
And, no, she was Athena.
I thought it was Hera. I thought you said Hera.
No.
I get the gods mixed
Athena
up.
Athena came out. Athena's the goddess of wisdom, hence the owl.
Oh, that's right.
Hera reverted back to, in the last issue, Hera reverted back to her godhood, and she was like, oh, no, I'm a god now. I don't care about people anymore. She was gone, which was kind of cool.
I think we'd be remiss without also mentioning the work that Matt Wilson's put into it, colorist Matt Wilson's put into it, because I feel like one of the things that attracted me about the book is like just goes to show how great of a colorist Matt Wilson is. I feel like Wonder Woman has been a book that sort of has had its own tone and feel, you know, and even with the emotions set by color alone, and sort of had a look that made it stand out from a lot of other books on the store shelves. But that whole team, you know, one of the things I loved best about the entire run was I always sort of considered myself a fan of that pantheon of gods anyway, and to see them sort of reimagined and dropped in the DC universe, I thought was
you're one of those Olympus geeks.
One of those Olympus geeks. But like, you know, just to see all that dropped in the middle of the DC universe and how it all came together was a lot of fun. I mean, it'll be a good collection for anyone when they finally release sort of the mega collection to have on their shelves.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing that Matt Wilson did, though, is that, and across the board as a creative unit, you know, when the fill-in artists came in, it was in the same tone, which is helped greatly by the color. It's totally escaping me, but there was only one or two guys, usually one. It was Tony Akins, I think. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, doing most of the fill-ins, and you know, Matt Wilson helped hold it all together. And I think that it helped that, you know, when the alternate artist came in, that was also consistent. It wasn't that guy 1 week and Rodrigo somebody the other week and somebody else. You know, like there was, you always kind of knew what to expect with that. And they saved the big moments for Chang. You know, like all you know, the big battles and the reveals and the designs, obviously. That had a lot to do with it.
I'm looking through the issue now, and there's a lot of bold color work, especially in the beginning with the big fight. Is that Neptune? Is that what it is, Jim?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the sun sets, and it's night out, and everyone is sort of has this blue color to them. And it's not like a normal depiction of nighttime where it's just dark in the background. This is like everyone is in the moonlight. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of unusual for a lot of regular superhero comics. And I like that, but the only like pop of color is the eyes from Athena. So it's a really great looking book. It remained great even through the whole run. It remained a great looking book, and this is just one of those special. You know, even as we soured on the most of the DC slate, this wasn't one of those books we always enjoyed.
Even if it was slow,
it was interesting. All the way through.
And it was interesting that like it was touched on in the other books. Like it wasn't like they just ignored this, but it was kind of like, yeah, you know, we'll do
your own thing over there, and we'll.
Yeah, you know. Oh yeah, yeah. You're like a god, right? And then they move on. And
the only book that really did that was Superman, Wonder Woman, of the books I read.
Yeah, that's true.
We would incorporate that, but even then, it was hard because this Wonder Woman doesn't really exist in the rest of the DCU.
Yeah, which was bold and cool, and you know what? One thing I don't know is like I don't know if this sold. I don't know if this was successful.
Yeah,
and I'm curious. I mean, they let them do it for a really long time, so it can't have been a complete tank. But you know, at the time that they were basically trying to mainstream everything they had as much as possible, they kind of went the opposite direction with this, and it's one of the only sort of out there concepts that they stuck with. So I don't know.
Well,
what kind
well, of I mean, it's over.
And it's telling that they are going completely the opposite direction with the next.
I'm sure, but you know, they got their shot.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And
oh, they told their story for sure.
Yes. You know, it wasn't truncated. It wasn't like wrap it up. It, you know, they got to do everything. I feel like it didn't feel like any of the other DC books. I mean, it was pretty unique in that way.
Right. So this issue was fun. It was exciting. It was great art, and it was a great wrap up to that storyline. So I'm, you know, happy I read this all the way through. Happy they published it. Happy they got to tell their story. And I guess I'll give the next creative team a shot.
Why?
I don't know. I like Wonder Woman. I'll see.
Well, okay. Let me know how that goes.
I will let you know how that goes.
Fine. For a while. I mean, just to finish. Like for a while, this was my favorite DC book.
Yeah.
And like that was for the first year or so. I was like, oh, that's the stuff. And it's never really gotten bad. And I've totally been with it the whole time. But that was impressive for a long time to have a Wonder Woman book be my favorite book. That never happened. So.
So this is the last issue of Saga in 2014.
Yeah, they're taking a little
two-month hiatus.
Which is weird because it feels like this issue is ready to jump right into something. And
well, that's kind of what they do, right? The last time there was a big hiatus, there was a big cliffhanger also. This is Saga 24, and the big cliffhanger is that a bunch of the characters that have been left behind in the world, Marco and Prince Robot the Fourth, are now banding together to find the main, you know, their families, and this is good.
I would like Fiona and Brian K. Vaughan to do one issue that was entirely of the animals, just all the animals. One with the seal, one with the new demon Saint Bernard, lion cat. All of them. Anytime Fiona draws anthropomorphic animals, I just want more.
I like that the seal is very proud of his chopper.
That's one of those millennial things you're talking about, that you like cute animals, right?
I like cute animals.
Like cute animals who talk, who are anthropomorphic or not. Like that's kind of like your whole generation's trademark.
That's our shtick.
Have a monkey do it.
Kitties. And Josh,
fucked a spider.
You don't like it.
What are you talking about? I don't like it.
You're not a millennial.
It's true.
Did you enjoy this issue, Josh?
Of course I did. The seal, you know, I was like, that went on for a while.
Nope, still good.
But you know, there were bits of it that were fine. I thought that it was the scene with the Will and the spider, which was sort of a trademark Saga, to just sexually shock the hell out of you, which I think is a fun thing they do with this book, and it really challenges the ideas of, I don't know, what you can do with a comic book and get away with. And you know, it's not like anyone's calling this book sexist. No one's doing that. Right. So they're doing something right. And I'm always like, well, how come this is okay? But if they had Iron Man do that, it wouldn't be. Fiona Staples to me is one of the best artists working right now. Like just across the board, what she does so much with so little apparent effort. I get, you know what I mean? Like, it's just so few lines. Everything just looks kind of perfect. And that stuns me every time. I also thought it was interesting, the reveal that that, I don't know, mossy stump lady or whatever she is. She was married to the author guy. And
well, she's also doing the color art too. So there's a lot of, there's not a lot of lines in her drawing, but there's the color, the backgrounds especially are very sort of painted and detailed.
I love the scenes with the twilight backgrounds. Mm-hmm. They just feel nice.
They feel good. Yeah. I really liked the little former sex worker girl hanging out with the horn lady and their relationship as it exists now, and sort of getting to peer into that world that they've created, the rules. Well, she's my whatever, not intern, but something, you know, so she can go with me into war zones, and I think that kind of stuff is neat. The rules
world
of those
building is pretty great. Yeah, this is a good issue.
It was, and it's you know, last page was like, oh, I want more of that. There has never been a scene with Prince Robot the Fourth that I wasn't like, I'm really glad that's over. Every time he shows up, I want to know more, and they don't give you enough of him, I feel, but maybe that's the best thing about it.
He's like the Punisher, Josh. He's your Punisher.
Well, no,
he's your Punisher. Admit it.
It's the opposite.
Well, because for other people, when they see the Punisher, they get excited.
Yeah,
the last page. You get excited for Prince Robot the Fourth. He's your Punisher.
I don't get excited for a lot anymore, so that's fine.
This is one of the, I think it's probably the only book I've ever read where dragon semen is a plot point.
You can tell that Vaughn really just gets off on shock value.
I think later in the Song of Ice and Fire that's a thing. I don't.
Well, there will be times where sometimes I feel I am too prude for this book. And it's not that the surprise sex scenes are fine. It's, oddly enough, it's when they use words like the F-bomb and things like that, where sometimes they feel like they're out of place. Sometimes they're fine, but sometimes I'm like, do you really need to put that there?
You're referring to the phrase "cunting cunt," because that was in this.
He clearly, this is a heightened world in that sense, because everything's dialed to 11.
Person said it though.
Right.
So that's cool.
The language and the sexuality, it's all dialed up.
But that's not, I mean, that's pretty consistent with his, you know, with Y or with Ex Machina.
It's a little bit more.
Yeah, but, you know, that's this world, you're right.
Mostly all, probably because he can do it at Image easily, more easy.
I don't think he had that much, you could say anything you want at Vertigo. I don't think that was a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
This is, they did Preacher.
That's true. Meat fucking. Josh.
I'd have missed it.
I'm very happy you're here, because when you were gone last time was when War Stories came out, so I didn't get to talk about War Stories. I talked about it with Paul, and he was just like, okay, whatever. War Stories number 2 from Avatar. This is where Garth Ennis took his can that he puts out for donations down to Avatar, and this is the story of a soldier flying a B-17 Flying Fortress.
Oh man!
You've not been reading this?
I didn't. I wasn't. I was out for the last one, and then so I didn't remember to get it, and then I just didn't see it was going to be. You have to warn me about stuff like this.
I put it in the rundown 2 minutes before the show.
I specifically asked you earlier. Is there anything I need to make sure I
just
read?
I figured you knew about War Stories. I will.
Okay. I only have one question.
Yeah.
Are we good?
Well, the thing is, you know how in the past with like tankies and the other stories we've said, I never want to drive a tank in a war.
I'm very familiar with the B-17, and I know my thoughts on that one too.
And then we said also there was an old War Stories that took place on a ship, and we were like, I never want to be in a ship in the war. Mm-hmm. And in this one, it's your chance to go, I never want to fly a plane in the war. So we're down to infantry.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You know those guys? They were the general support staff.
Right. We already established that would be Ron. We established this long time ago. Ron would have found a way to be on the mailroom guy back at the CP, and you and I would have been in the fucking foxhole in Bastogne.
Yeah.
We already established that. Anyway,
maybe like the guy who does like the math for artillery. Because they're behind the front line. Although those guys are in danger of enemy artillery.
You mean like Colonel Nixon?
No, Nix was intelligence. He's far too... I could probably do that job.
Until he got in trouble, and then he had to parachute as punishment.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's your Band of Brothers talk for this episode. But
I feel like you cut it off earlier than you had to, but I understand why.
This story, it's a three-part story, and it's called, as I scroll back, Castles in the Sky. It's about an American soldier. He's a gunner, a side gunner in the Flying Fortress.
Is Matthew Modine in this?
He's not.
Okay.
But it's
anyone get that?
It's from the one with what's it called? What was it called?
Memphis Belle.
Memphis Belle.
It's the only B-17 movie.
So not only do we deal with his missions and the Germans, and this one's all about all the horrible missions that they go on, but also he's befriending the kindly single British woman in town and her son who hates him because his dad is dead died in the war. So there's that sort of patented Garth Ennis commentary on war on one hand, and also the patented Garth Ennis fantastic character stuff going on in these parallel stories. The only negative thing I'd have to say, and I'm just checking to make sure I'm not an idiot as I scroll back to the credits, is that I think the art level is a little lower than you would have gotten from a Vertigo book, Vertigo war stories, or from a
Dynamite
war stories. Keith Burns is really, really, really good at doing the planes, which I guess is the most important thing.
That is key. I mean, basically, if you're looking for the artist, you're like, you draw the plane and they whip up a good plane and you're like, all right, you got it. That's
right. And those scenes are fantastic. I feel like it suffers a bit when he does the smaller stuff with the girl and the son. But that's a minor quibble.
They can't all be Chris Weston.
No. You're going to really enjoy this when you remember to read this.
I will read it. I will. I have a stack of backups from weeks that I wasn't on that are...
But you should put these at the top of that stack.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
All right, there's that.
Fine.
Did either of you read Rasputin, number one from Image this week?
Hungrily.
I decided I didn't have enough to read, so from Image, so I decided to try this out. It's from Alex Grecian and Riley Rossimo, the team that brought us Proof.
Yeah, and I saw that this was coming out. I got very excited. I was a big fan of Proof. I like Alex's writing, and I like Rossimo's work. And I've seen it over the years. And the thing that I came away from this issue was thinking that he has really come a long way since Proof. Yeah. And I liked Proof.
Art-wise, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was very nice. Really, really good layouts and figure drawing and all the stuff that was in it. I thought it was wonderful.
What did you think of the story?
Well, there wasn't a ton to it. Which was good because I was reading it just before the show and I was like, oh, there's no words in this. That's awesome.
Yeah, go quick.
no, but like I love that. I love that as an experiment, but a use of the comic book form. There's basically huge sections of this with no dialogue as we sort of learn about this version of Rasputin. If you don't know, Rasputin was a Russian monk, often called the Mad Monk, rumored to be unkillable. People try to kill him, and he would not die, or he would resurrect himself. Got very close to the Russian royalty. There's another book. It was a book of the year for iFanboy about Rasputin at one point, but this is a different take on it. In this version, we go back to Rasputin's childhood, and we see his father, who is a gigantic bear of a man, fight a bear, and we also find out that he's a mutant. He has
big old bear fight.
It's like pushing daisies in old Russia.
Yep, he can bring back dead people.
I liked this, so
including bears.
That's pretty much what we learned.
Well, and I'm not sure how I feel about this particular version yet, because I do, Josh and I love history, and I don't necessarily need a supernatural take on Rasputin, but I did like the way they used it. So his dad's a dick. He takes Rasputin out to chop wood. They go back to he makes him Rasputin carry a giant armload home. They go back to their little shack, and Rasputin's dad beats his mother to death, knowing fully that Rasputin will just revive her. And then so he does. And then so then the next day they're going out again, and a bear attacks, and the bear and the father kill each other, and Rasputin just revives the bear and leaves his dad to be dead. I did like that. That was fun. So yeah. He's like the ghost over his shoulder as an older man. That is the dad's ghost.
Yeah. I also thought the back cover was really cool. It's just the text piece where it says, when the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Robert Evans say that?
You bet your ass he did. but I just don't know. There's not enough here for me to really decide what I feel about it, is what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cold open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks so fantastic.
You're right
about Riley Rossimo.
They've done it in the past. I loved Proof, the whole thing, all the way through. Mm-hmm. And so, Gresham's written couple of novels in that time. You know, he's a stronger storyteller, you know, obviously more confident to be able to do a comic book like this. And, you know, let's, I'm on board. I'm definitely sticking around for a while.
You think they'll deal with his purported giant penis?
I hope so. I mean, that's kind of the only reason I read
comics. He's got one. Why not use it?
Duh.
So when Ron left the show many years ago, Ron, if you're a new listener, was the one of the co-founders of iFanboy and this show.
He really did read a lot of Image books.
I thought for sure we were done with Savage Dragon.
Oh,
like, said, Ron is gone. No more Savage Dragon talk, and yet here we are, Savage Dragon 199. That number can't be right.
Am I the
just how?
Am I the only one who read this?
Yes. What do you think that whole just preamble was about?
Come on, man. This was
go back and read 198 issues before that.
This whole issue was double page spreads.
I feel like the number should be higher, shouldn't it?
Oh, that's not what I thought you were saying.
It's been
20
years, hasn't it?
It doesn't do the monthly.
Yeah, that's true. It's not a monthly book.
He's a one-man show. What do you want from him?
Hurry up, Eric Larson. You're slacking.
funny.
I'm an on-again, off-again Savage Dragon reader, but when I heard that this was a double-page spread issue, I will take any giant Eric Larson art that I can get. It's a pretty crazy issue. He fights a bunch of demon beast things. What I really liked is how Eric Larson really... These aren't double-page spreads for the sake of being double-page spreads. Granted, there's one that totally is. But there's just one scene in particular that I encapsulated sort of everything that I really like about Savage Dragon. And it sort of comes at the end, and all the, you know, demon beasts are... you know, dead and on the streets or whatever. And there's a ton of people standing around in a crowd, and everyone's having their own small little conversations. And it doesn't matter where you look on this double page spread. Like, there's no rhyme or reason to essentially where your eyes need to go. Like, there's a cop that's, pulling a lady's camera away, being like, "Hey, none of that." And there's, you know, just like weird and crazy things where the interpersonal relationships that I think Eric has down pat is exemplified in just this spread of a thing. It was a fun experiment to see Eric do something like this. He's been doing sort of gimmicky type things as he goes to 200. I can't say
finds
I'm totally...
any way to stay involved with this emotionally. How about this one? They all have cow heads. I don't know.
I'm every so often I don't really like Malcolm Dragon, Savage Dragon's son, but hopefully when we get to 200 it'll start to pick back up. But anyway, double page spreads, it looks fantastic. It's Eric Larson, so check it out just for the fun.
I will.
Good reminder time to check out ifanboy.com/Amazon. The holidays are finally upon us, Josh.
They are.
We're entering to November now, so that means you're going to start seeing the holiday commercials. Start your shopping. Be a good citizen. Spend all your money at the stores. And if you're going to be doing your Amazon shopping for the holidays, please help us out by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon using the little link there to Amazon, making all your purchases. We get a piece of that sale. Nothing out of your pocket. Only comes out of Amazon's deep pockets. So we appreciate everyone that does that for all their holiday shopping, or all their regular shopping too. But if you're a big holiday shopper, we would thank you if you did that. And ifanboy.com/registration is where you can become an iFanboy member at $3 a month, at $30 bucks a year. And that's people that help us directly. We really do appreciate that. So everyone who helps us out either way is the best.
You should spend thousands and thousands of dollars there.
You should.
Everyone listening.
No reason not to.
Yeah.
I already gave all my money to NPR this week because they were hammering home.
Oh, mine was over like a month ago. It was awful. And I'm already a member, so I'm like, I met a guy who's one of the local NPR reporters around here, and I was such a fanboy. I was like, so tell me. I just wanted to know everything. He's like, so do you just drive around all day? And he's like, yeah, you get mileage. Like, so how come I have to listen to all the commercials when I'm already a member? He's like, we're trying to fix that. And I was like, okay, wait, why are you leaving? Hey, come back.
And another thing, Fantastic Four 12. This has been sort of your standard. The team.
It was like at a panel if somebody's got like Joe Quesada up there and they're asking him tons of. I was that guy, but for NPR. That's what I was. Not well, whatever correct. Happened to the special report that Susan Stamberg was doing on the Supreme Court?
Jesus.
Oh boy.
Where Ann Garrels has she not gonna go to Iraq anymore? I don't know. She's national. I'm like, okay, yo, sure.
They were like, we got
I
one
think
of those.
Robert Siegel has to go.
Sorry. He should have seen you coming by your outfit.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four number 12 has been the standard. The team breaks up storyline, but I think that James Robinson's peppered it with a lot of fun details, including this issue, which included Spider-Man guest star, and there was a lot of Spider-Man guest starring this week in various comics. But Johnny Storm's in trouble, so it only makes sense that they would have Spider-Man seek out some help because they're supposed to be best friends. Yet you never see that actually happening in the comics. And also, I've seen some little nuggets in here, more multiverse stuff out of Marvel, which is suddenly everywhere, which is leading you to next year's multiverse story. So they're really playing that up with all of a sudden, hey, we never talk about all these multiple Earths, but there are, and here they are, and let's deal with them. So it's interesting to see them start laying the seeds for whatever they're going to do next year. Just probably mash them all together.
Bah.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy.
This was, I guess I really am Ron because I only want to talk about this because we finally get the fate of Richard Rider. And what happened to him and
retired?
why we're never going to see him again.
Oh, no.
We're never going to see him again. It's so funny. The issues leading up to this, I guess it was branded an Original Sin tie-in, even though that event is over and the new one has already started. anyway... Yeah, we learn that Rich Rider, one, had a crush on Gamora, and well, two, yeah, I mean, naturally, two, wanted everyone to keep it a secret and sacrificed himself to save, I guess, Thanos and Star-Lord and Drax.
Did he sacrifice himself so no one would find out about his crush?
Pretty much. He essentially, at the very end, told Peter Quill and said, hey, I've had a crush on Gamora, but you can't tell her, and you can't tell her I'm doing this. And
cool,
so the
man,
whole the whole tension and the issues leading up to this was, you know, Gamora was all angry that Star-Lord was keeping a secret from her, and then when he finally told her, then she got even more angrier. But this was one of those issues that we get from Bendis that hits you in all the right emotional places. I like to always be surprised by Bendis with issues like this. And this is a good one. It closes a chapter. Questions can stop being asked. I'm sure there will be all of those.
At conventions?
At conventions.
Now questions can finally stop being asked at conventions. Connor, we can go back.
So is he dead? Like, he's dead.
He's dead. He essentially takes the Cosmic Cube and...
no more Riders?
He combines that energy with the energy of the Nova Force and opens up a portal for the Guardians and Thanos to get back or to leave the Cancerverse and get back into our bubbly, warm 616 universe.
Is there a reason that is there some legal reason why they've decided that the new Nova guy is better? Is it just because he's been in the cartoons and kids know him better, or we've just decided to Kyle Rayner that shit?
I just think they just got rid of him. There's no shady backdoorness. They just got rid of him.
Doesn't make any sense.
Oh. I mean, why? How many people read that book?
No, but it's just strange that they would change the primary character. I mean, they could have very easily made Richard Rider one in the cartoons and all that stuff. And I don't know.
But the one
that
they have now is all over
the place.
What's
the new character's name?
Sam.
Sam. That's right.
Alexander.
Sam Alexander.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, but he was in like...
He's the one in the cartoons and the video games and all that.
So it's like Jon Stewart, actually, which is probably not a bad thing. But I guess it's fine. I feel like we never got the definitive Rich Rider story, though. I don't even know what that means.
Southern Bastards number 5, Josh, what did you think of this? It was basically the origin of Coach Boss, which is turns out it's actually his name and not a joke.
It's a helpful coincidence is what it is.
I thought it was a joke.
No. Yeah. Well, I think that was the thing. He played you, boy. It was good. It was real good. You know, that sort of ending the last time was a shock because it's like, well, what the hell are we going to do now? Mm. But, you know, it's like in Scalped where all of a sudden we're going to hang out with Red Crow for a while, I think. And you sort of get to know him and what his deal was. And I think it was laid out pretty damn well. It's like he was the nerdy kid who, you know, who had to prove himself and had to, you know, maybe not all – he's Rudy but evil. Basically, is who Coach Boss is.
He's got a lot of will.
Yeah, yep. You know, it was good. I like the sort of impending arrival of the daughter, and the you know the way that this we got to see a little more of how the town works and what the deal is with the whole thing. And I'm in. You know,
mm-hmm.
I liked it.
This book scares me. In
what sense?
Well, I live in the South now.
Sort of.
Well, sort of.
Like, he lives in Tennessee.
He's in Nashville. It's like the Austin of Tennessee.
Yeah. No, it's just you know when we, it's all the little things that
the Confederates gave up Nashville. They said, "Oh, we don't need it. It's fine," and they left it. So
that. Well, it's all the little things that just make the book feel more
authentic.
Real. Yeah, real and authentic that just has gotten me more involved in the book because, I mean, I see those people. There are people like this that exist.
The guy with the rebel tattoo on his neck?
Yes.
That guy scares the shit out of me.
Well, it's just like – but that's the thing. It's like I love the authenticness of it, and that is one of the things that just sort of keeps me going. That and especially, you know, since the gut punch of the issue that we got before this was just, this book is good. Just read it.
This has been three Northeasterners talking about the South. All right.
So Northeast. Whenever I read Civil War history, I'm like, those jerks.
What are these two books we're going to talk about now?
75th anniversary celebration from Marvel?
Yeah, what is that?
Oh, man.
Like one of those big books that you buy like at Barnes & Noble like on that table, and it's $15. It was originally $80.
This had art from Bruce Timm, Chris Somney, and a ton of other people. It's one of those, you know.
I'll do that again like Stefan.
With Tim.
No. So this was like one of those Finch, one of those all-star books telling stories.
Yes. the first story by James Robinson, Chris Somney, and Jordy Belair is worth the price of admission alone. And essentially
I'm sold on that right away.
Yeah.
Now I feel bad. Thanks.
It goes through, like, you know, sort of like the early days of the Marvel Universe as it would have existed, you know, in its early days, where you see, you know, young Donald Blake, young Tony Stark, and, you know, the Fantastic Four before
Donald
they...
Donald Blake, the Gerd Jarlson, Odin, and everyone else from the Nine Realms will be there.
Right, I'm making the face. I'm downloading it now.
Yeah, well, it literally goes through all the major players in the Marvel Universe there, sort of, and how it all just sort of came together. And that story alone, I was just like, oh my god, I would like more of this. But then you continue on, and you know, Bruce Timm does a story that's based off something that Stan Lee wrote in an old issue of Cap that was more like a prose story, and Bruce Timm drew it. And it looks fantastic. I would like more Bruce Timm Captain America. It's never going to happen, but
this cover is such that I would never, ever have seen this on the rack. It looks like a brochure. I mean, it's a neat piece of art on the front, but that titling at the top is just abysmal.
And then, and it's great. And then interspersed throughout the various stories are fun little Marvel stories that never happened, much like, you know, the teasers that have been been sending out. But, you know, with like Bendis and, you know, his cavalcade of artists like Diodato and Quinones and Pacelli and things like that, where,
what
you know,
I don't have on that guy.
Where, you know, it's they're fun little things like that, you know, it's a big meaty book. Apparently, if you got the print edition of it, there were a bunch of really weird 75th anniversary ads in it from like licensees and retailers and things like that, but they're not in the digital edition. So, I didn't see those, but anyway, it's a nice little sort of one and done type thing to sit through, and you get some good chuckles. There you get to see some great art.
That Bruce Timm story is gorgeous.
Right?
Holy cow.
Isn't that amazing? Don't you want more of that?
It's almost, yeah. It's, yeah. It's, yeah. Dave Stewart colored it.
Yeah.
And it's like he's got a little bit of Joe Simon, Jack Kirby, Captain America going on, like the posing and stuff, but it's Bruce Timm. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I got to go, guys.
So now I really, really thought we were done with the death of Wolverine. No. He died. That's the end.
So this is the one that I tried to finish before we got here, and I didn't have time for it. I was like, oh, maybe I'll try to read that, because it's Jerry Duggan and Old Man Cap, which that sounds good to me.
That's why I picked it up.
Do I need to go? I need to finish this, right?
You need to finish it.
Well, what did you think in your partial read?
I literally was on the first page, and I was like, I got to go record the show. Sorry, Deadpool. You lose this time.
So this book, Death of Wolverine, Captain America and Deadpool number one, is Cap and Deadpool realize that AIM has a knife that has Wolverine's DNA in it, and it has obviously fallen into the wrong hands, and they don't want them trying to clone Wolverine. So they have to go in and get it. And Old Man Cap just is priceless. Priceless in this book. And everything from like, you know, Deadpool would make references that Cap obviously would not understand. You know, that joke is still funny. Scott Collins did the art on this. So it's got like a weird sort of like 90s-ish vibe to it. But like 90s sort of done right.
Is it good Collins or bad Collins, Josh?
I'm actually still looking at the 75th. which I have a comment I have to make on it when we're done. Bring
all
me
right,
back.
All right.
Let's go. I'm gonna look at that now. You go ahead and I'm gonna get there.
So anyway, it's just one of those. It's a more and more I find myself attracted to one and done type stories, and this is very much.
It's good, Collins.
Good Collins.
Yep. Yeah. That'll do. So there's an in memoriam page in this 75th anniversary thing.
Oh yeah.
And it's like the name of everyone who'd worked on Marvel books who's dead.
Jesus.
But yeah, it's one of those recycled Captain America images, I think. No, but here's the thing is that they've selectively bolded some of the names and not others. Which is weird.
It's like the people get applause at the in memoriam.
Sort of, yeah. Like Dwayne McDuffie, real big. Jerry Siegel, no. Joe Kubert, no. Jack Kirby, he gets a big one. A lot of other Jacks don't.
That's weird.
It's really weird. Like, yeah. There's not a design thing. So Ross Andrew gets a big name. Mark Gruenwald, Saul Brodsky, Steve Gerber gets a big one. Someone who's went by the mononym Stockbridge.
So what you're saying is all the goodwill they engendered with their Bruce Timm art has now been lost on you.
I just want to understand this. Vince Coletta got a big name. Well, I don't see why that's names. Okay. Wally Wood got a big name. George Tuska, big Bill. Kurt Swan, tiny name. Maybe if you worked for DC, well, you got a tiny name.
Dwayne McDuffie worked a lot for DC.
That's a good point. So that takes that one away. Gardner Fox, small name. Harvey Pekar, small name.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
Doesn't make any sense. That's stupid. Make everybody equal or not.
I don't understand. Kurt Scharfenberger, mid. But his name is really long, so it would make sense that it was smaller. That's what's going on. Seth Fisher, small name. Stan Drake, Stan Goldberg.
Huh. How big is Stan Lee's name? Is it blinking?
He's not dead.
Oh, shit.
Well,
he's been dead for years, I thought.
He's not technically dead.
The robot stand's been around.
Robot stand.
Yeah, we'll live forever. That's an old podcast joke.
He's a true believer.
So those are the books we're going to talk about on this fifth week of comics.
There's a reason I can't remember your name, even though I've met you 100 times.
Programming problem. You can go to ifanboy.com and find the post for this show, talk about these books, other books you read this week, all at ifanboy.com. And now, last time there was a major movie announcement, we talked about it at the show, so in the interest of equal time, so that no one yells at us, we're going to talk about the Marvel Studios' big announcement from this week, in which they announced their Phase 3 movies, taking us through 2019.
It's so, like, super villainish. Well, now the Phase 3 movies would be...
James, Josh and I will be in our 40s when this announcement is finished.
Oh my god.
Shut your whore mouth.
Jesus.
Yeah. So
you guys aren't even going to remember the stories that these movies are based off of.
I don't remember who I'm talking to right now. So we're just to quickly run down in case you were under a rock on Tuesday, Marvel Studios threw a big hurriedly put together event in Los Angeles to announce their movie slate. So in 2015, we've got the Avengers Age of Ultron, and we've got Ant-Man. And I think both of those are technically Phase 2?
Yes.
So Phase 3 kicks off the next year, 2016, with Captain America Civil War and Doctor Strange. And we'll talk about the casting in a minute. And then in 2017, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Thor Ragnarok, and Black Panther. 2018, the Avengers Infinity War Part 1, Captain Marvel and the Inhumans, which I know Josh is excited about according to Twitter. And 2019, only the one film, supposedly, Avengers Infinity War Part 2, which I don't believe there will only be one film that year.
No.
But so that's the big announcement. The big news, obviously, in this was that we got the Black Panther and Captain Marvel solo films, Captain Marvel, of course, being Carol Danvers. So you got your first female lead film from Marvel and your first black lead film in Black Panther.
And you find out she's Kree and gets cancer.
Jesus.
And so they also announced that this thing that Chadwick Boseman is going to be playing back Black Panther, and you may be wondering why they announced that 3 years out. That's because he's going to be in Captain America Civil War, which is shooting, you know, soon. So much like the announcement for all those DC characters, you can now assume those are going to be in the Batman Superman movie. Chadwick Boseman's going to be Black Panther in Civil War, and probably in Avengers Infinity War and that kind of thing. So, James, you still cover this stuff. What do you think of these announcements?
An announcement like this was very unlike Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know, they like to go 2-3 years out at a time, not something like this. The internet sure is excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see them put so many, or it's interesting to see like where the other movies just sort of fell in line. Cause you know, when the DC movie announcement happened, everyone was like, oh great, Wonder Woman and, you know, and Cyborg and, you know, diversity and all that. And then Marvel comes around and says, we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to do it earlier. And so everyone who is all like, you know, oh, Marvel, it's a shame Marvel hasn't done it yet. And then when Marvel does it, people are like, it's Marvel's still bad. Marvel's still sort of the enemy.
I love that the bullshit intercompany like one-upsmanship, which is always the most transparent thing on earth, has elevated itself to this like multi-$100 million film level.
Oh, yeah. Well, those guys across town think that they can spend $8 billion on movies. I love it. I love that it still exists, and it's bullshit. Like, but
it is crazy that it's extended it to Hollywood. I mean, anyone who doesn't think this was a response to what DC or Warner Brothers announced is crazy. Also, I think this was also part the leak of the trailer, I think.
Yeah. Well, also in the way that they did it. I mean, you know, the one thing everyone likes to say is, oh, look, DC did it, you know, in front of shareholders, and Marvel invited fans.
Right. Like, I saw some comment like, well, this clearly shows DC only cares about making money.
Yeah.
Well, let me introduce you to a little company called Marvel.
which is owned by another company you may have heard of who owns everything.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I am super excited for all of these. I think these will all be a lot of fun. It was very interesting to see. You could see where the definite age gap was in comics fans, where there were people who saw Thor Ragnarok and said, "Oh my God, great! We're gonna get Walter, you know, Walt Simonson stuff here." And then there were other people being like, "Oh, they're making a movie out of robot clone Thor and from Civil War," and they were like, and so it was just. It was interesting to see that. I mean, who knows? They could go in either direction. Civil War.
I will walk.
You don't want to see a movie about a robot Thor?
No.
The thing is, I'm really excited for all these because at the end of the day, I have the time of my life at those movies in the theater.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sure, it's kind of crazy they dump the next 5 years of their schedule on us at once, but... whatever. I'm excited
But we still don't know who's going to be in any of the movies, so the internet still has its speculation articles, Doctor and I thank Marvel for that.
Doctor Strange is probably Benedict Cumberbatch. That's been the news this week. That seems to be from all my sources. Tell me that's probably what's happening. But
Which, a month ago, everyone was begging for Marvel to get Benedict Cumberbatch into the Doctor Strange role, and now everyone's like, no, dumb. Dumb. Yeah. Don't do it, Marvel. It's stupid.
Well, the thing about life is it's much more enjoyable if you don't read much of the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we found since retiring from my fanboys' daily activities. So you tend to enjoy these things much more when you don't read that stuff. But
so, you go ahead. Real question, though.
Yeah.
Are you really excited? Are you like, I can't wait for these? Or are you like, oh, that'll be fine when it comes? Where are you on that continuum?
Well, the thing is, it's like, it, like anything else, the more of something you have, the less inherently exciting it is.
So. Well, you know, and that's the thing. And as I've said for a while, I'm now over. I'm getting annoyed with the sentence. I can't believe we live in a world where. Well, yeah, you can, because it's been this way for a long time. I can't believe they can send information over the air. Like, you know, it's we're all fine with it.
Well, the thing is, like, when the first Avengers movie came out, obviously there was a level of excitement you're never going to match because it was the first time that ever happened. Now, we're going to get, by the time the fourth one comes out, I'm not going to be as excited, but the thing is, it's still the characters and the actors I love doing the things they love. So,
admittedly, much older and limpier.
Right. I mean, you're going to have a nearly 50-year-old Iron Man by that point, but.
But I mean, the fact that a movie. The
appropriate amount of excited for movies that aren't going to come out for another year to 5 years.
Yeah. But I mean, even if Avengers Infinity War is 10% of the crazy the comic story is, it's going to be great to see that on a big screen.
If that was true, we'd all be super excited about that second G.I. Joe movie. And we're not. And we weren't.
Well, they didn't do the broadcast energy transmitter for that one, though.
Did they?
If they did, we would have been more excited.
I would have. You'd have told me out of Josh.
Actually,
Apole,
that second one was pretty fun, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Are you going to see it again?
If it's on TV, probably.
Yes, that doesn't count.
No, but these are a different level. And I think the reason aside for the DC movies is because...
I went to Avengers, and I was fine with it. I wasn't as excited that year as I was to go see Lincoln, but that's me. You know, I haven't seen it since.
You're not the audience for these movies, though.
I know I'm not. I know. It's funny because no matter how many times I've said that, people think I still am. You must be psyched about the Inhumans.
No.
I guess. You know, it's fine. Good. I read comics. I liked those. That's fine. A movie is a different thing.
Did you like Winter Soldier?
I did. I liked Winter Soldier a lot. I thought it was really good. But in the sense that, like, I watched it and I was like, that was really enjoyable. But it's not going to be a movie that I'm going, like, I like comic books that do a certain thing, and I like a different type of movie. As a cinema fan.
I'm gonna side with you on this one. I rarely rewatch Marvel movies. I get really excited to see them in theaters, but I rarely rewatch them. I have
I don't talk about them like I do, you know, like I have favorite movies that I quote to my friends, that I think about, that I watch over and over again. They're not these movies.
Yeah.
You know, and I like them. They're fun. It's cool. But it's also, there's no newness to them anymore that they can do it. It's great. But at a certain point, like, I don't want all movies to be this.
Which is the thing that is the problem. This is actually a discussion that we had in the Birdman podcast we put out this week, and more on that later. But, you know, as you can like these movies and also not be comfortable with the fact that this is all that Hollywood is doing now. Mm-hmm. You know, between these movies, the DC movies, and the Sony movies, and the Fox movies, you're looking at dozens and dozens of superhero movies over the, you know, for the course of the next few years. And it's a lot. It's a lot.
It really is. And you have to wonder at what point during this timeline is the public going to go, all right.
It's not about us at all. It's about the Russian public and the Chinese public.
Well, whatever public. Somebody's going to eventually have it. You know, it's like that old line, like somewhere is a supermodel and someone is
sick. But they're 10 years behind us.
Yeah.
They've only started getting these movies recently. So we've been doing this since 2000, but China's only been getting these movies for the last couple of years.
I don't get the sense that we're sick of them yet.
Remember when we got excited that they were making a sequel to X-Men?
And it was a great movie.
It was.
And the most recent one was awesome.
But the thing is, like, if you go back to the 50s, they made a shitload of Westerns because people were into that, and it stopped eventually.
Right.
You know, because people had had enough. And that, you know, I mean, I guess that makes sense then to flog it as much as possible.
Well, but I feel like the big difference there is that there you can only have so many cowboys, right? Cowboys.
Are
inherently the same.
Wow.
Okay. Well, okay.
Where's the eject from the call button?
Let's go there now then, shall we? I watched the pilot for The Flash, the show that everybody is way into. And what I came out of it was that I'm watching another remedial superhero story told well, but sort of rejiggered for a general audience. And the thing that he's sitting there at the end asking is, can I be a hero? Am I good enough? That's a generic superhero story, any way you look at it.
I know.
Absolutely. And it's the same deal. It's there's themes and stuff that you're going to be doing just like in Westerns, and you're going to end up using them up. And then eventually, these superhero movies are going to get to the point where they're niche-y, and they're doing subtext stuff, like they're doing Unforgiven, where they're deconstructing the superhero. Yeah. That'll be interesting. Although they're kind of doing that already with, like, you know, indie movies, Super, and stuff like that.
Well, I think that one of the only slight differences with the Marvel movies, if you compare them to, you know, either Fox, Sony, DC, whatever, is that each of them has sort of had their own little bit of flair in terms of feeling like some form of genre film. Like, I mean, the first Captain America is a very different feel than the second one. Mm-hmm. And I can appreciate trying to make changes like that. And as long as they keep doing things like that, I think I'll be interested.
Well, they got a straight up horror director to do Doctor Strange,
right? So yes, they are superhero movies, but the directors and stuff that they're getting are, you know, make them different.
I will give you that. Like they've done that while at the same time maintaining a continuity between them. Yeah, which is actually commendable, and it's actually something that I've always liked about superhero comics, is that they all exist in the world, the characters are consistent across them, but that, you know, one book can feel very different than another. So that's neat, and you know, they haven't made a bad movie.
Well, Iron Man 2 was pretty bad.
Yeah, you're right. Iron Man 2 was awful. But if you'd seen Iron Man 2 without having seen any of the other ones, you'd be like, it's amazing.
I don't know.
Okay, you're right. It was a piece of shit.
So
Favreau didn't want to be there. No one did. It's fine.
I'm excited for these. I do love these. I do actually watch them. I own them all in Blu-ray, and I watched them. I've watched every one of them at least once or twice. So I'm looking forward to it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I got time. There's a lot of things happening between now and the next one. So
yeah,
I'm not gonna go nuts. But
my kids will be much older then.
They'll be going. They'll be wanting to go to all those. You were taking every one of them.
Oliver's a weird kid, man. Do you want to go see this? And he'll be like, no, I'm not going to do that. But please, I've been waiting for you to be old enough to do this. No, I'm not. I'm not really into anything you are, Dad. Okay.
Well, Henry's 5. He'll be 5 by the time the third Avengers comes out.
Jesus. Yeah, he'll be driving a motorcycle.
When I was 5, I was reading G.I. Joe.
Yep.
All about Vietnam, getting your face blown off in a
retrospectively. Retrospectively, I learned a lot about Vietnam-era weaponry.
Yeah, totally.
I was thinking about it. Like, I knew words like howitzer and the Browning machine gun, because all of that stuff was just Vietnam-era weaponry. And I had a cold. I read those cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's weird.
Chief Warrant Officer. I still don't really know what that means, but
that was Duke, wasn't it?
I think so. I think a lot of them were warrant officers.
Yeah.
We should have interviewed Larry Hama and asked him what a warrant officer was.
We were intimidated. There's a few that we've been intimidated. Larry Hama.
If you ever interview Hama, find out what a warrant officer is.
All Because there's no other way for us to get that information. We got to find the Vietnam era vet comic book writer.
So that's it for the show. We're going to skip the emails.
Is he the one who would bring the loaded gun to the office?
Yes.
God, I love that story.
And we're going to skip the emails because we went long on movies. So
you don't get to do that story today.
Contact.
No one gets to bring a loaded gun into the Marvel office and then have an anecdote told about it later. Those were different days.
Contact at iFanboy.com or call voicemail line 888-FANBOY 326-2697. Quick plugs. We did an unexpected podcast this week. Me and former iFanboy writer Mike Romo and someone named Ron Richards discussed Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
Oh, you let him back?
Podcast. We brought it back for a long time. Very interesting movie, very interesting discussion. But please, please do not listen to it unless you've seen the movie because it's best to know as little as possible about the film before going into it.
I'm going to be a while then. Because I guarantee it's not open in here.
But if you did, I can guarantee that's only on 50 screens all across the entire country. So, but if you did see the movie, please give it a listen and then drop some comments in the comment section so we can talk about it because there's a lot to talk about in that film. Also, Paul and I wrapped up our discussion the DC pilots with talking about Constantine 2 weeks ago, or last week. So listen to that one. Josh was not on it. You can stop asking why.
Wait, I'll tell you why. Because people say to me, hey, some version of Constantine on TV is better than no version, right? And I say no. No.
But Josh, you are, one, the comics donut guy, and then two, the comics Constantine guy.
American version, sure. But not Constantine. Constantine. Big difference. Hellblazer. That John is hinted at in this show.
You've let the internet down, John.
And he has a short fucking jacket.
Plug your website.
Comicbook.com. It's really easy to remember. Real easy to type in.
You got real lucky with that one.
It's no CBR.cc.
How much of your content would you say, what percentage is TV and movie based versus comic based?
Our audience comes in from the movies and TV stuff, and we're looking to build up our comics content. I would say it's mostly TV and movie news right now, but we're looking to change that.
Is it movie stills?
Nah, I don't. Well, sometimes.
Sometimes stills? You know. That was the old joke on the iFanboy.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Movie stills? You got to post with movie stills? Always the top.
I still get an email with like previews to run, yeah. And I just am never so happy as deleting that email. Not because I really hated the previews, but it was just a pain in the ass to load.
Oh, yeah. And then the thing would break.
We do a lot of Easter egg stuff from the various TV shows and movies and things like that. And so people seem to dig that and things like that. And, you know. But yeah, it's a little site. It's growing.
Well, there you go.
Growing pretty fast. But, you know, so it's a good one.
Check out comicbook.com for all your movie stills news. And you can listen to Birdman and the Constantine podcast. Over at iFanboy.com where you can comment on this show, talk about this week's books, find all of our other podcasts. Everything's happening on iFanboy.com.
Yeah, you can follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy or facebook.com/iFanboy. And you can follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick or at Fuzzy Typewriter. Forget that guy. Or Jay Flanagan. That's me. And then what are you, Jay Viscardi? Is that what it is?
Jim Viscardi.
Okay, that was close.
Yep.
I found you eventually.
Finally, if you'd like to share a writer review on iTunes or better yet, tell your friends about us, that's the best way to help people find the podcast. It's a writer review. It helps them bubble up in iTunes and that's how they know if they like it or not. And if you're writing a review for a different show, feel free to slag off Josh. It's a completely normal thing to do to talk about Josh on another person.
We addressed this last week.
I'm doing it again. There's no point in letting it die.
I will tell you, this week I kind of sounded like an arrogant dillhole. I've sounded super negative. I was kind of just playing geek devil's advocate, really.
Right.
Because that conversation.
The fact of the matter is, as soon as we sign off, you're going to forget this conversation ever even happened.
Oh, wait, are you done? Sorry, I was halfway away.
Looking at that Bruce Tim art.
I'm on the toilet right now.
Thanks, Jim, for coming on despite what just happened there. We appreciate it. And I know how difficult it is to deal with him, but thank you for coming on.
I love being referred to as him when I'm right here. You know when you're a pronoun, just him, and you enunciate it a little bit?
Yeah. So that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
I'm Jim.
There you go.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.